It is time for Tech Talk with the Boston Globe's Hiawatha Bray. Hiawatha, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So we talk about all kinds of stuff. I was particularly riveted. Last time you were here, we talked about this monitor device out of MIT that could track someone's breathing and help with the diagnosis and potentially treatment of Parkinson's disease. First, I have that right, basically.
That's right.
All right, but now you have more.
That's right. The same team, led by Dr. Dina Katabi and a bunch of grad students at MIT and some other universities where I think the Mayo Clinic worked on it and some other people. They developed this device. It's basically a very, very low-powered radio transmitter. It's about 1,000th the power of your home Wi-Fi router. Incredible as that is, that can actually act as a radar because the reason it does is because your body's full of water. When a radio wave hits it at that frequency, it bounces off. As opposed to the wall, it'll penetrate something dry, but it'll bounce off something with water in it. And so they can actually get the return of this radio wave and use it to do things like measuring your lung expansion as you lie in bed. And this is the next great leap which they made, which was their discovery that the way your lungs expand provide a symptom of early Alzheimer's. Early Parkinson's. How they knew that, I don't know. Way back when Parkinson's was first discovered, the guy mentioned in passing, it seems to affect people's breathing. So they studied it, and it turned out to be true. If you can very precisely track somebody's breathing, it gives you an early clue about Parkinson's. Why does this matter? Because there are no good biomarkers for Parkinson's. You can't give somebody a test where you get a blood test or something.
Just say, yeah.
And this is horrifying, because it turns out that by the time you know somebody's got Parkinson's, the only way you know is that they've got the really bad symptoms, and by then there's nothing you can do.
And it is one of the top neurological diseases in the world.
1% of American adults get it, I think. It may be up there with Alzheimer's as one of the fastest growing neurological diseases in the world. It's absolutely awful. And now it turns out that the same team that came up with that was working on another way to use the same device using different software. You put it in the person's house, it's beaming out these radio waves, and what it's tracking now is your gait. The way you walk. For years, scientists have known that you can learn amazing amounts of diagnostic detail by just tracking the way people walk. But until now, what they've had to do is bring you into the hospital or bring you into a lab and have you take all kinds of walking tests in which you are not walking in a natural way, in a natural environment.
Right. I don't walk on the treadmill I would in my kitchen.
Exactly. You may even be tired from your trip to the doctor's office, and that could change the way you walk. They put this in your house and they can monitor your walking around in the house all the time. And it turns out they did a test with 50 people, 37 of them with Alzheimer's, 37 of them with Parkinson's over a year. And they could actually measure, they could detect which of them had Parkinson's and which of them didn't. And they could even measure the effect of taking a Parkinson's medication.
This is partly because Parkinson's can lead to a slow or disrupted gait.
That's exactly right. The more severe the symptoms, the more difficulty you find walking, the slower you walk. And they found out that if you give them this medication, I don't want to try to mention that, it's a complicated name and I don't want to get it wrong. You take this medication. Shortly thereafter, this device showed that the people who took the medication were walking better. Their walk was smoother and faster. And then, like a couple of hours later, their walking deteriorated as the medicine wore off. Now, that's hugely valuable because of two things. One, they can use this to more accurately decide what's the best dosage for a patient. But the other one, which could turn out to be really huge, is that this is now a new way to test the efficacy of new Parkinson's drugs.
So
you give somebody the new drug, and then you track them as they walk around and see if their walk gets better.
So I was almost going to say it could provide you the opportunity to kind of crowdsource testing of new medicines. Of course, that's not exactly right because there are still really important protocols.
That's right.
But it does allow you to get feedback on the performance of the medicine in places, in ways that had not been possible.
Absolutely.
Up until now.
In almost real time, among real world conditions, potentially with thousands of people. But the other thing, now this is really cool, you don't even need as many test subjects because you are testing these people basically every day as they're walking through their homes. You gather up from each test subject a much larger chunk of data. So you can run these tests with fewer people.
Almost like big data.
That's right. You can run the test with fewer people, and you can run them for a shorter period of time and still get statistically significant results.
Okay.
It's amazing. It's just amazing.
So it's incredibly encouraging, and there's one word that's echoing in my head, and that is the word monitor, especially when you put it together with in your home. Oh, and is the medicine Levodopa?
Yeah, Levodopa.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. It's Levodopa.
And so, monitor in your home.
Yeah. Oh, come on. I know what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. It is the classic two-edged sword of the world in which we live. We live in this world of insanely inexpensive sensors, computers, and networking. And so now it becomes almost a trivial matter to track everything people do.
Yeah.
And yeah, it sometimes you worry about that. In this context, I don't see that it's worrisome at all. Keep in mind, we're talking about medical data. We still in this country do not have a decent federal privacy law, but at least we have one on medical data.
Yeah, that's a great point. We're better protected on medical data.
We have really good laws on protecting people's medical data. So I'm not really worried about that. What we need is a good law protecting all the rest of our data. But no, I don't see that as a threat.
No, that's such a helpful point, Hiawatha, because what I was thinking about is that larger set of concerns around privacy. But HIPAA.
Exactly.
Medical laws do provide a level of protection.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
All right. So let's step outside of medicine now, because one of the other things that you and I have been talking about pretty regularly on Tech Talk, and I hope that we will continue to do so because it's an industry that's just going to become more important, is electric vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
So you raised this new question, and when I read it, I'm like, well, thanks, Hiawatha. Now you've given me something new to worry about, which is, dun, 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 is your home ready to charge your electric vehicle? And
well,
of course, my answer is no.
I wouldn't worry too much about it. See, it's fascinating. Actually, this is the reason why electric vehicles are going to dominate this. If you read all these legislation about zero emissions vehicles, they always throw in, yes, but you could also use hydrogen fuel cells. Those are considered acceptable. But there's no hydrogen stations anywhere. There's nowhere to get it. Hydrogen fuel cells are a great idea, but they're not going to work. The great thing about electricity is your house already has electricity.
Everywhere.
The wiring's already there. All you're going to have to do is beef it up to bring in electricity for a car. So that's why electric cars are going to probably dominate the zero emissions field. And putting an electric charger in your house,
if
you have a single family home, isn't that big a deal. In fact, I was kind of surprised. I was asking people, does it really raise the value of your home if you put in an electric car charger? They said, not really. I mean, it's a relatively minor add. You can expect to pay around $2,000 for it. And there are people working to bring the price down even lower. I wrote in the story about this really new technology. It's really cool coming out of a company in Philadelphia called ConnectDur. I don't know why they call it ConnectDur.
But it's fun to say.
Yeah. But it's a really very simple idea for people whose electric meters are sitting right next to their driveways. They invented a car charger that plugs into where your electric meter currently is. Most people don't realize this. The electric meter is plugged into your house. It's bolted down, and when you unlock it, you just pull it out of the wall, and your house is disconnected. So what they came up with is a car charger that plugs into that same slot.
And then you plug the meter in
on top of the car charger, and that's it. Your house is now wired for a car charger.
And the reason this is important, if I understand, is that if you want your car to charge in your home, and again, this is if you are lucky enough to own a single-family home and don't have to go to some public space.
Exactly.
Right? You have to actually have the kind of voltage outlet that it takes to run something like a clothes dryer.
Exactly.
And you probably don't have one of those, for example, in your garage. Probably have a standard one in your garage.
Exactly. It's not unusual technology. It's just unusual where you're putting it. Like if you happened to have one of those outlets in your driveway or something, charger is like $400 or $500. You could just buy a car charger, plug into that, and you're good. But sometime next year, that is supposed to hit the market, and it looks like a really cool solution.
However, $2,000 is the rewiring one.
Right.
Yeah.
The thing that also surprised me is the National Association of Home Builders does a list of all the stuff that people really want, high technology features on their cars.
On their houses.
And they're telling home builders, here's what you really need to build into the home if you really want it to sell. And they had 21 items. And what you do think was absolutely the last one on the list? Car chargers. I was shocked. Almost nobody was saying, I'm dying to get an electric car charger. They all wanted smart thermostats.
Well, you just sat here. I think it was the last time you were on air talking about the fact that with California having moved the way it did to create a market for electric vehicles, other states like Massachusetts were going to follow. And this is where we're going.
Yeah. By the way, I'm not convinced that what California did was a good idea, but not out of any hostility toward electric cars. I think electric cars are going to be so attractive by 2035 that you won't have to force most people to buy them.
Which was the California mandate, basically.
Yeah, which is the California mandate. Oh, by the way, this hasn't become the law yet, but just yesterday, I think, or the day before, the same organization, the California Air Resource Board, issued a recommendation. This isn't a law yet. They want to ban heavy trucks by 2040.
Wow.
They want all heavy trucks to be on batteries or something like it by 2040.
Heavy gas-powered trucks.
Right. I mean, yeah. Diesels, like, yeah. You know, big rigs.
Oh, interesting.
Heavy, yeah, those things.
So electric 18-wheelers.
Electric 18-wheelers, which they're working on, but I'm sorry, I just don't think that's going to be practical by 2040. There's going to be a lot of progress in that direction, but the size of batteries that you're going to need to drive a truck that large, it's going to be really hard to make that work.
And just a reminder for listeners, part of your concern has been the capacity of our electric grid to
yeah.
meet that level of increased demand. For example, if Massachusetts fully follows California.
Right. And that's going to be an issue all the way. I just read something today that really had me worried. Now, don't freak out about this.
Oh, there's I'm going to freak out.
There's an article in the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists that is talking about the fact that we just had this period in Europe where the winds dropped off so precipitously that the amount of electricity generated by wind farms just fell dramatically, and they had to turn on more coal-fired power plants to make up for that. Well, they said that the international, what is that called? The International Climate Change Body, the IPCC,
I think it's the IPCC.
One of their scenarios predicts a 10% drop in average wind velocity on Earth by the year 2100. If that happens, all these wind farms we're building are going to reduce substantially less electricity than we're expecting.
And you don't want me to freak out about this.
No, you shouldn't freak out about it. It just means that people who are expecting us to rely on wind power, there are a bunch of problems with wind power, and now there's a new one, the possibility that planet-wide, the winds are starting to slow down. And there's actually data to indicate there may be long-term declines in wind speed. Hmm. And that will mean that wind farms will be less effective. I know, isn't it great?
So you are listening to Happy Day with Hiawatha Bray.
Yes, absolutely.
Here on Radio Boston. Okay, listen, in our remaining time, you wrote a piece that I thought was really interesting. We're just going to hit the highlights mm-hmm. on COVID and tech and your grades. And I was interested in the A,
mm-hmm.
and I was interested in the basically failing grades. Yeah. So the A.
I thought the A grade would have gone to telemedicine, which has been extraordinarily popular and successful now that people are trying it. The technology's been around forever, but nobody was using it. Doctors weren't wild. But why weren't doctors wild about it? Aha! The reason doctors weren't wild about it was because insurance companies weren't paying the full rate for these various consultations that they would pay if the patient showed up in your office. During COVID, the federal government with Medicare and a bunch of private insurance companies did this thing called parity. They said, for this time only, temporarily, we were going to reimburse doctors exactly as much for a telemedicine visit as for a real-world visit.
This being parity, P-A-R-I-T-Y.
Yeah, P-A-R-I-T-Y.
It always sounds like parody radio, so
right.
Parity, yeah.
So between that and the fact that people couldn't go to their doctors, demand for telemedicine just exploded. I mean, like Mass General Brigham said, they had like 1.7 million telemedicine cases in like 7 months. It was extraordinary. And the doctors like it and the patients like it. But now that Joe Biden has told us that the pandemic is over, that just unleashed a whole swarm of bees. And this is one of them. If that's technically true, Medicare can stop paying parity for telemedicine visits. And then people are going
to
say, doctors are going to say, hey, we don't want to do this. We're not getting paid.
So it's really going to come down to insurance.
It's going to come down to insurance.
Whether it stays an A or not.
Exactly. That's right.
And the failing grades?
Oh, everybody knows this one. Remote schooling.
Yeah.
All the data is pretty much clear on this. And I have a child in grade school, and take it from me, yeah, remote schooling really has not done anybody any favors. We do want to be fair. One of the problems is that this was done on an emergency basis. This was not carefully planned with rigorously designed curricula or anything. Huge numbers of people didn't even have the right equipment at home. Lots of low-income families didn't have broadband. So it's not surprising that it was not hugely successful, but there's no question about it. It was not successful. And the people that I talked to said that they don't think that even under the best circumstances, remote education of kids is a workable idea.
All right. Hiawatha Bray, technology writer for the Boston Globe, always bringing us new things to think about. Also, by the way, author of the novel Power in the Blood, our guest here on Tech Talk every other week. Thanks, Hiawatha.
Thank you.